Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Ryan Hampton, author of Fentanyl Nation, Toxic Politics and America's Failed War on Drugs. Welcome to the JX, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Well, your book's title certainly grabs attention. Then I read your introduction. Wow. You drop a few bombs just in the intro with the story of a police officer, the shocking data on fentanyl daily deaths, your indictment of the political landscape, and your own involvement with substance abuse. We'll get to your story shortly, but let's start with the story of this healthy police officer that you talked about, and we'll work our way through the rest.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was what came crashing onto the scene, I think, was a real pivotal moment around the current day narrative around fentanyl. In East Liverpool, where I write about the story, there was a seemingly overnight this national headline around how just by touching fentanyl, you could overdose because a police officer had, you know, found it on their uniform, wiped it off with their thumb, and then, according to news reports, had overdosed from fentanyl. And it made it on, you know, the Daily, on the New York Times and the ABC morning shows and CNN and the Washington Post ran this sensational headline around police officer overdoses by just touching fentanyl. And, you know, there was never a toxicology exam done. There was never any proof that this is actually what happened. It was all narrative based. And what we know now is that it's actually physiologically impossible to overdose by touching fentanyl. I think that fentanyl is scary enough as an illicit drug on its own without adding more fuel to the fire on it. What folks don't, I think, realize is there's real world impact. And I open the book specifically with that story because a lot of the misinformation and these fantastical stories that we hear have driven really harmful policy that, you know, negatively impacts people who are actually looking for help, right? People who need treatment, people who need recovery support. Look, I applaud law enforcement, right? And our public safety officers for the work they do every single day on this issue and on combating the fentanyl in our neighborhoods. But again, these stories without any data, certainly no science or any evidence behind them, just add fuel to the fire. And a lot, we've seen this. I mean, we're getting into October now, and I guarantee there will be stories around how, you know, Halloween candy is being laced with fentanyl. And there's zero evidence around that. But what we see are politicians, people running for office, really race to the microphone to propose policies that are, I think, in some fashion are misguided and really doubled down on the failed war on drugs, utilizing a playbook that we saw from, you know, the 80s and 90s that we know just devastated communities. I believe, and I think the evidence points to, have led to more drug use, led to more incarceration, led to more overdoses in our communities. And I think that we need to have serious people with serious solutions who are addressing the fentanyl crisis in a practical, meaningful way, as opposed to scoring political points and utilizing the issue, you know, for what I think are just, you know, the equivalent to clickbait with the media.
Well, there's definitely a public hysteria around it. You write about President Richard Nixon targeting the anti-war left and Black Americans. And you quote Nixon's domestic policy advisor, John Ehrlichman, saying, quote, "The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and Black people," end quote. And then, Ryan, you followed that quote by writing, quote, "It leaves little doubt that Nixon's drug war was a campaign to oppress the president's enemies and destroy marginalized communities," end quote. Do you think that America's so-called war on drugs was a manufactured ruse to destroy targeted populations of Americans?
Well, look, I think that President Nixon never really intended for this to be a literal war, right? I think it was a political weapon for him, but I don't think that he intended that here we would be 50 years later, you know, talking about bombing Mexico as a solution to the current day fentanyl crisis. I think that, you know, much like Johnson before him proposed a war on poverty, I don't think that Johnson thought this would be a literal war either. What I do see, and I think that what the evidence tells us, is that politicians today are taking the war on drugs is alive and well, and they are taking it literally. You know, and I do think that, you know, fentanyl specifically has been singled out as a target in that war because the conversation has shifted to more of a toxic tone, particularly around this 2024 election, you know, really saying that this is a problem that is being, you know, solely manufactured and caused in the United States by other people. We keep othering. And when I say othering, we're looking at, you know, the southern border. But what, you know, most Americans, you know, when you really look into the reality and the facts around fentanyl, is we have just as much of a problem around fentanyl coming through our northern border, too, from our Canadian neighbors, right? One of the largest fentanyl lab, illicit fentanyl lab busts that we've had in the last year was in Vancouver last March in 2023. Fentanyl is being made, illicit fentanyl is being manufactured here in the United States. There was a bust, a large bust in Arizona just recently. And the way the fentanyl that is actually coming through the southern border, because yes, it is coming through the southern border, and yes, it is being manufactured by the Sinaloa cartel south of the border, but it is being transported here by United States citizens for United States citizens, over 80% of it through legal ports of entry, right? Which is why the bipartisan border security deal was so important, because it would have updated our technology to be able to detect it in these large cargo containers that are coming through. So I think, you know, the current narrative surrounding fentanyl is just eerily similar to that of the crack cocaine, you know, epidemic in the 80s and 90s. It terrifies me because it weaponizes our politicians to go heavy on a supply reduction approach as opposed to a more balanced supply and demand reduction approach, which is really what we need. We need serious people solutions.
We're going to get to those solutions in just a second. I'm talking with Ryan Hampton, author of Fentanyl Nation, Toxic Politics and America's Failed War on Drugs. Now, Ryan, you mentioned just a moment ago about how politicians are leveraging this issue. And in your book, you talk about vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance. Why did you include him in your book?
Well, you know, Senator Vance, look, I would be willing to sit with Senator Vance and talk to him about solutions to the overdose crisis if he was willing to meet and talk about it in a serious manner. But the reality is that he is out there peddling, you know, misinformation. And he has gone as far to say that fentanyl is a weapon of mass destruction that was created to destroy, you know, conservative communities and MAGA communities, so they won't vote. I mean, this is the kind of hogwash that we are hearing from certain politicians these days. He's truly hasn't been a very serious person on this issue, and we certainly haven't heard anything meaningful from him that would actually, you know, help curb overdose deaths, certainly in his role as a vice presidential candidate. But I also, you know, explore, look, this isn't just Republicans. Democrats spew, you know, maybe not as hateful comments, but Democrats are certainly proposing legislation that's not helpful as well. Legislatures on pretty much a bipartisan basis in 46 states, nearly 46 states in 2023, presented what they call solutions to the fentanyl crisis, which over 90% of them dealt with it on the supply side, looking at more incarceration, right, as a way to curb overdose deaths. And we just know empirically that mass incarceration is not going to solve this problem. So I really put the blame at the feet of both parties for not taking this seriously. But certainly Senator Vance has amplified some real rhetoric that's just, you know, not only false, it's outrageous.
So, Ryan, what's the actual data on the impact of fentanyl?
Look, since 1999, you know, 1 million Americans have died of overdoses. You know, by 2022, we were losing over 300 Americans a day to overdoses. We have the highest drug overdose death rate in the world. Only about 20% of Americans who need help actually are able to get it. We have a treatment gap in this country of over 90%. The help that I'm talking about is buprenorphine and methadone and things like wide access to things like Narcan. Synthetic drugs such as fentanyl are the cause of nearly 70% of these deaths. Good news is, though, Just as of last week, we saw a 10% decline in overdose deaths here in the United States. Dr. Nora Volkow, who is the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, who is someone who has worked for multiple presidential administrations, both red and blue, attributed that to the top two things that I call for in my book is, you know, one of the nine real solutions we could look at, which is the wider access and availability of Narcan and people carrying it, but also lower barriers to people being able to access MOUD, which is the medication for opioid use disorder, the gold standard, such as buprenorphine and methadone. She does not credit, you know, more incarceration rates for people who are struggling as one of the reasons. So I think we need an all hands on deck approach. Again, I believe it is a careful balance between supply and demand reduction. But it's important that we talk about this in serious terms. And my fear, I write about it at length in Fentanyl Nation, is that, you know, in this weaponized toxic political environment, politicians are racing to the microphone, you know, to look tough on drugs, right? We know that a one-sided, lopsided approach on this is only going to lead to more catastrophic outcomes because, look, we could eliminate, eradicate fentanyl from the United States completely, right? And we will still have a major drug problem. It just won't be fentanyl. It will be something else tomorrow because we now live in the third wave of the overdose crisis, arguably the most deadly wave of the overdose crisis, which is the synthetic market, right? These are synthetic drugs. So it is fentanyl today. It will be something else tomorrow. And any good student of politics or economics, you know, will tell you that in order to start reducing supply and lowering supply, you've got to reduce demand at the same time. Yet we only look at the supply side of the model because that's what you know sells newspapers and gets folks on TV and is sexy for TV shows and the media. You know, saving people's lives and getting people the help they need and really looking at the underlying factors that drive people to drug use in the first place. You know, things like generational poverty, like these are strategies that are really the long game that we have to start sooner rather than later, or we're just going to continue playing whack-a-mole for the next 40 years on this issue. And I truly believe that drug policy here in the United States, if we don't get it right now, you know, what we're doing, you know, in 2024 and particularly in 2025 legislative sessions are going to, I think, determine drug policy and what direction we go, you know, go down for the next 20 to 30 years.
Ryan, I hear the passion in your voice, but you call the fentanyl problem in America an endemic versus an epidemic. Can you sum that up for us?
Yeah, I believe, you know, look, in COVID, let's just take the COVID example, you know, we dealt with that as a true public health crisis, right? We had a vaccine in record time. We had, you know, public health folks not going door to door, letting neighbors know and citizens know how to mitigate spread. We had real-time data that was available to pretty much anybody on Google, right? We invested a record amount of money to get this to get the COVID crisis and epidemic under control, and luckily we did, and we saved a lot of lives doing that. I call fentanyl and the overdose crisis endemic because even though it is called a public health crisis, we don't get the public health solutions that other public health crises do. We've pretty much been, you know, conditioned to live with the fact that overdose is just going to be a natural part of 21st century life. And that is the true definition of an endemic. It is something that we are conditioned to, you know, just live with, right? And we don't get, you know, the type of resources on parity with any other type of public health crisis, which is why people should really start looking at this as an endemic or calling it an endemic until the federal government, until state governments, until local municipalities and partners start truly dealing with it as an epidemic, not as a part of just how we should be living here in the United States. Overdose is preventable. We have the tools and the means to actually curb these overdose deaths and provide a meaningful response to our communities that saves lives and heals families. But we just haven't been able to, you know, capture the political willpower of our policymakers to take it truly seriously.
Well,
and I argue strongly that we need to start doing that.
Your book does. And so we encourage everyone to get this book. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I knew we needed much more time for this. What an insightful conversation. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Mike.
My guest is Ryan Hampton, author of Fentanyl Nation, Toxic Politics, and America's Failed War on Drugs.